Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
Eric Melito is the director of upstream and industry operations for the American Petroleum Institute, and he joins us now. Sir, what exactly did the president do yesterday by barring offshore drilling in certain areas in our country?
Well, he exercised his power under a law known as the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act, wherein the president from time to time has the ability to withdraw certain areas from leasing for oil and natural gas. The problem is this is not a permanent ban. Back in 2008, President Bush actually reversed a ban just like this to open areas back up. So we're hoping with the new administration we'll be able to work with them to make sure that we allow these opportunities to occur here in the U.S. rather than push these investments to other parts of the world.
Drilling in the Atlantic right off the coast of Virginia has been an issue that we've discussed quite a bit here. And, of course, famously, Senator Kaine from Virginia, he was in favor of that until he became the running mate of Hillary Clinton, and then he was opposed to it. How does this impact the economy in Virginia and the industry in Virginia?
Well, interestingly enough, the Virginia delegation, both senators and the congressmen and women in Virginia, have been looking to rebuild the shipyards there. And one way you can do that is by bringing more business to the offshore of Virginia. And we've seen that in the Gulf Coast area, where shipbuilding, steel workers, offshore vessel companies, they have great businesses because of the offshore oil and gas industry. And it's known to work very compatibly with all the other uses. And the other thing I point out with Virginia is that we would be looking to have this development more than 50 miles from the coastline.
That is incredible. And that's one of these big clashes that I think that you can see is already starting to form, as much as Donald Trump is trying to avoid it by bringing in people like Al Gore and meet with them. Is there going to be a way to avoid a big argument once the administration gets in? Is there a way that we can all, I hate to say this, kumbaya, get along? Can environmentalist and job creation actually exist within the same breath in the state of Virginia?
Well, we believe that it can. We want to make sure we have a balanced approach where we're putting all the world-class standards in place to make sure that we're protecting the environment, the health of our workers, the health of the public. And the process is meant to do that. It's meant to make sure that we have strong regulations in place, strong standards in place, that we review to make sure there are no ecologically sensitive areas, and we drill in the places that make the most sense. But we also have not allowed ourselves to even explore with seismic research to determine what the resources may even be out there. We need to take these baby steps, and we're not even allowed to do that.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I hear from the people who are against offshore drilling. They say that it is dirty, it is dangerous, and it's unnecessary. I'd like to take up that last part, the unnecessary part, because I think I'm trying to understand the environmentalists. I'm trying to, you know, figure out some common ground here. If fracking is doing so well in America, and if drilling here in North America on land is still yet unexploited, why go through the dangerous and potentially quite harmful to the environment process of offshore drilling and digging in the ocean? We saw what happened down in the Gulf of Mexico, where a bad thing can turn very ugly for us. Why go into the ocean when we have so much oil to drill here on land?
Well, people may not realize it, but our offshore production right now is at almost at record levels. We get close to 2 million barrels a day. I think we're maybe at 1.7 million barrels a day right now. And that's huge. That's a very important area for production for this country.
What part of domestic production, what percentage of domestic production is actually accounted for in offshore drilling?
I think it's around 17 or 18%. It was up to 30% at one point. And to follow on to that point, we know from our own government that we're going to need oil and gas for decades to come, and we're going to need to look at other places. So we want to at least have the opportunity to first look in these areas. We also got to recognize that places like the Arctic, we have our military leaders pushing us to be leaders in that region generally. And they recognize if we get out there and start developing a presence from an oil and gas standpoint, that's going to help us to build up the infrastructure to have a greater geopolitical presence in the Arctic for our country, where Russia, China, Canada, Norway, all these other countries are taking these steps way ahead of us, and we're kind of in the back being observers.
Our guest is Eric Melito. He is with the American Petroleum Institute, and we're speaking about the president's unilateral executive action yesterday. It's not illegal, by the way. This isn't unconstitutional. As our guest pointed out, this is part of the 1953 Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. President Bush opened this up in 2008, you said. So now, here's an interesting trend. Bush opens up this drilling in the final year of his presidency. Here we've got Obama now taking offshore drilling off the table in the final month of his presidency. Obviously, this is a political hot potato. Do you think that the incoming president will wait until the final months of his presidency, or do you think that he'll take action immediately?
Well, all the signs we've been seeing are that he's a man who wants to take action quickly. You see that in the appointments that he's been making. And he was very clear on the campaign trail and in his campaign documents for his first 100 days, first 200 days in office, that oil, natural gas, bringing that investment back to the U.S., bringing those jobs back to the U.S. is one of his key pillars.
Absolutely. Now, how do you think we've got, you know, great governor out of Texas going to be Rick Perry, going to be Secretary of Energy? Think this is going to work?
Well, it's going to be interesting. People were questioning that, but Texas is one of the largest producers of wind energy in the world. Mm-hmm. Texas is an all-the-above state. We as an organization, the American Petroleum Institute, we support an all-the-above approach. Our companies invest in oil and gas. That's their core, but they also invest in wind, solar, geothermal. So I think it'll be interesting, but people should give the guy a chance, given his record in developing renewables as well as oil and gas.
Eric Melito with the American Petroleum Institute, thanks for joining us today.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.